Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Imagine a cave. And it's only a small cave in the middle of farm country. There's nothing special about it necessarily, except for these holes. They're like small niches placed at even intervals. And due to the shape of the walls, it's almost like it's part of a Roman basilica. But smaller. I mean, smaller even than a modern house. The people who live near this place, they think little of it. If I told you its name, I doubt you'd ever heard of it. But this little cave, you might think of it like a smoking gun. It, along with a few other random bits of carved rock, have the potential to upend Western history, and I'm not really being hyperbolic. You see, those little niches once held the ashes of the dead. And if their ghosts chose to speak to us, oh, the stories they would tell. So come with us today as we enter the Columbarium of Tercera.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderney, this is The Shocking Details.
Okay. Yeah, our theme song, our patented theme song.
It's not patented. Anyone can use it.
Let me know when you're ready.
Oh, I'm ready. Lead us in.
Okay. Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
Yeah, what are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, the Columbarium of Tercera. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, like we're going to take a little departure. Just a little random
small
note. Yeah. Like viewer precaution. There's going to be no blood, no murder. Sad. This is going to be a fairly nonviolent episode. But we usually try to dish out a steady diet of serial killers, espionage, disasters. But every once in a while, we feel this urge to force you guys to, you know, listen to one of our, you know, passions, which is mysteries of anthropology. It's more of a Vincent thing, I guess, but I'm really into this stuff too. It really is interesting to wonder what the hell people were up to eons ago, and they were up to something. We just aren't really sure what. They leave tantalizing clues behind, and this is one of those where there's some tantalizing clues that may point to something kind of, you know, big. I don't know if I go as far as you in saying that it's going to upend Western history, but nonetheless, it opens up an interesting chapter that we were not aware of before.
I will get back to that. Just allow me to contain myself for a moment. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm just going to pull in my excitement about this for just a second.
Yeah.
And because this was like way more time and energy and effort than I put into a normal episode. Weeks of reading scholarly reviews and graduate level thesis and learning about, you know, KR decay and things like that. So, So this cave, it's actually two caves, but one of them is used to store hay. I'm actually not even joking. As of early 2022, it was closed to any visitors because of that. It's literally full to the top hay drying out. So it's important to understand that these caves, which are referred to as the Columbaria Romana in Portuguese, they're located on the Azorean island of Tercera. The Azores, by the way, is a bucket list visit for me. Like I must go there by the end of my life. I don't know how. It's very difficult to get there, as we're going to talk about.
It is. I really want to go myself, although it's not top of my bucket list.
So enough of that. The Azores are a part of Portugal, probably no. The line on this is that the Portuguese discovered the islands in 1427, a full 65 years before Columbus did his thing with the ocean blue.
Mm-hmm.
This is a point of pride among the Portuguese. It's and even though it's taught in schools, it's just objectively untrue. The Portuguese didn't really discover the islands, but we're gonna get to that in a minute.
They ran across the islands, you know.
Well, they weren't the first to do so. We know that for a fact. But then mm-hmm. even on top of that, 1427 is actually probably not accurate. The islands appear on maps from multiple maps from the 1300s. So even the 1427 is kind of bunk.
Yeah, but I mean, but on Portuguese maps, so probably maybe somebody Portuguese discovered it a century before. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's actually pretty likely, or at least saw them. They may have just passed by them.
Yeah, but the Portuguese, you know, I mean, they were a seafaring nation. I guess they still are. And mm-hmm. you know, they did range far and wide. There's no doubt about it. So it's, yeah.
They really did.
Yeah. And just to give them their due, I mean, the colonization of the Azores is arguably an accomplishment that's, that could be put up against the accomplishments of Columbus and his Spanish buddies.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, first of all, I mean, when you think about it, and what Columbus did was not a remarkable feat of navigation. You set sail from Europe, go west, you're going to run into something if you sail far enough, something called the Americas, you know, whereas the Azores, they're kind of hard to find. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, these days they wouldn't be, but I mean, back in the old days with the navigational instruments that they had at that time. The Portuguese did it well before Columbus. They were also amazing sailors, incredible shipbuilders. The Portuguese caravel ship was super high tech for its age and still looks kind of cool today, if you ask me.
I think they're neat. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're very cool, but although they don't look like, the most seaworthy ship I've ever seen in my life, but they're still pretty cool.
But that only makes their accomplishments that much cooler.
Yeah. Yeah. So the settling of the Azores is proof positive of the facts that they were incredible sailors and shipbuilders.
Yeah.
Because even today, getting to the Azores by sail from Europe is a big pain in the butt. Apparently, the wind is against you the whole way. The transatlantic sailors that stop in the Azores mostly are coming from the opposite direction, departing from the eastern U.S., the Caribbean, because the trade winds and the currents will naturally take you that way. But if you're leaving from Europe, the trade winds and the ocean currents do not want to take you there.
Nope.
So unless you got a ship with a big engine in it, like we have today, you're in for a rough slog there. But yeah. And how it was done back in the day, once there was an established route between Europe, it's like you had to sail to the south of the islands.
Way far south
till you pass them entirely, and then you hook a hard right, and then you can drop into another trade wind and come at them from the west. It took a great deal of navigational skills, again, considering the instruments they had at the time, you know, and a great understanding of your ships, the currents, your sails, the winds, and all these other little factors. And if you screw up even a tiny little bit, you're stuck at sea, which back in the 15th century, well, that was not so bueno. It's kind of a death sentence, really.
And can we just talk for a second about the first guys to make this maneuver? They must have had cones gavetes.
Mm-hmm. Is that the Portuguese word for it?
No, it's not at all. It's completely wrong. It's what Google Translate thinks the word for it is. But they must have had gavetes of solid brass.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the Portuguese, I guess they were out just like looping around looking, and not just the Portuguese, other people too, out there just sort of looping around in the ocean looking for, you know, better fishing grounds and maybe new islands and stuff like that. I'm sure a fair number of them didn't make it back.
It's not a fact, I know, but I'm just going to have to imagine that the first guys who made it there were probably lost, right? They overshot it and were trying to, I picture them trying to get back to Portugal.
Yeah, it's entirely it. And they wind up like spotting these islands. So they go ashore and reprovision, maybe find some fresh water.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially if you're Portuguese, you're probably a good fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing you don't have a ready supply of out there in the ocean is water.
Right.
Water that doesn't have salt in it anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're lost. You stop there until you find yourself a nice little freshwater spring and get some water. Sure.
Right.
You know, while you're at it, you know, shoot a rabbit. I don't know.
Sure. Well, I don't even know if they had those on there, but yeah, eat something. So, you know, just imagine this right now, right? Okay. So they're on the Azores, and to put it in its historical context, before Columbus was even bugging the king about heading out to do some genocide, the Portuguese already had a population living on those islands and shipping routes mm-hmm. coming and going the whole Magilla. It was already yeah. set up before there was any colonization off of the European continent, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an unrivaled feat in its day.
It's a reminder here, the Azores are smack in the middle of the Atlantic. They're like 1,000 miles from Europe.
Yeah, about 2,000 kilometers from Portugal.
Yeah.
But then it's even crazier than that because it's not like you just hop straight across from Lisbon. You've got to go this crazy route that can yeah. kill you if you screw one thing up. And the techniques and the technologies that they used were the seeds from which every European empire, for better or worse, grew from. So the Azores mm-hmm. do hold an important place in our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And you can understand why the Portuguese, especially the Azorians, I don't know if that's what they call themselves, but I like the way that sounds. Azorians, they just aren't having it if you tell them that others got there first, you know, mm-hmm. you know, which is understandable. But it looks like perhaps other people were there first.
I'm going to call it a fact at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the question is like, did they just stumble across it and then leave without, you know, noting where it was and ever making it back to there? Because yeah. after all, what the Portuguese did, if that's what you did, if you just were lost, you stumbled across it and went on your way and have no idea ever to get back. Well, the Portuguese actually won up those guys because they were able to find it and get back to it again and again.
That's
and again.
True. You know, and so. put a permanent population on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah. first, I want to talk about the name of the place.
Yeah.
So the Portuguese name, this is how we know the name, even in the name is how we know that the Portuguese weren't the first to get there. The Portuguese named the islands after a type of hawk that they encountered when they first arrived. Now, the hawk that they mistakenly believed was a mainland species, the Azore, but that's a totally different type of hawk. But that's not actually what matters. That's not the important thing. The important thing is that the reason they thought it was the same hawk was because, among other things, they look like them, but they also almost exclusively eat rodents, rats mm-hmm. and mice, which is a cool story. So why is that important?
Yeah, well, because where do those rats come from? Norway,
exactly.
Of course. They come from Norway. All rats come from Norway, according to that racist Swedish scientist who hated Norwegians. But that's a whole other story.
That's a different thing. Let's talk about that on a different yeah. episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about. But you know, basically every rat on the Azores is a Northern European rat.
Mm-hmm.
So check yeah. this out. The Azores has no endemic rat population. Any mm-hmm. rat on the islands is descended from ancestors that brought them there on ships.
Yeah,
but those rats aren't Portuguese. They're not Iberian, and we can actually identify them genetically.
Iberian rats?
They seem to be...
Right. They have Spanish accents.
Their taste for sangria.
Yeah.
And not Akavit is the giveaway. But yeah, no. But the rats are not... They're not the kind of rats the Portuguese would have brought.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that the hawks had changed their diet their whole life by the mid-15th century... says that the rats were there before the Portuguese were there. So mm-hmm. whose damn rats are those?
Good question. And how did the hawks know to come looking for them too? That's another weird thing.
But, well, that says that they must have had a long time to sort of, you know,
discover
change
the
their behaviors.
And...
No, yeah. What they think is that the hawks on the Azore Islands actually adapted to hunt rats.
Oh, so they were actually pre-existing hawks? So they
yes.
were maybe they fished before the rats came along?
Yeah, because I don't think they were pulling any rodents, and there's not any large like mammals that they could feed on that they were probably eating some kind of marine life and then mm-hmm. adapted to eat the rat population when they were deposited there.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. So remember how insanely tricky it is to get to the islands, right? And people sail there even now by coming at it from the west. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see who was hanging out west of the Azores with a ship full of Northern European rats prior to the 1400s, and maybe way, way prior to the 1400s. I mean, so for quite a while, like at least the 18th century or so, the scientists have had a theory, which is the obvious one everybody's go-to, which was it was the Vikings, right?
Yeah, the Vikings,
yeah. The Norse were definitely west of the Azores, you know, and they were over in Newfoundland way, way back in the day, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
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 By 1050, we know that they were making routine transatlantic voyages.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so they were definitely west of the Azores. And, mm-hmm. And the Vikings were at least partially Norwegian. And of course, as we know, as I said earlier, the Norway rat, even though it was not quite fairly named, because, you know, it's not just Norway that they come from, but the same. But apparently the rats that live in the Azores are the same rats that live in Norway and other northern European countries even today. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about this, too, is that to hit the Azores with your rats, you know, you'd have to probably depart from somewhere between maybe Virginia and the Caribbean.
Yeah, that'd be the best place to leave from.
Yeah. Although, conceivably, you could probably depart from Newfoundland and maybe you decide to take the scenic route home, just see what you can see.
You absolutely could do that, but Viking ships only had a fairly limited range. That's why mm-hmm. they, you know, didn't sail straight across from Oslo to Canada. They had to bounce along from Greenland. So what that means is that that if this is true, it would seem to say that the Norse were at the very least exploring much further south than your standard history book is going to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this surprising revelation led to some people dismissing it. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine a bunch of Vikings chilling on a beach in Jamaica? That's just not something you can picture in your head.
I think that'd make for a great movie, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But then we found their poop. Ah, yes, human scat, which was found just this year in the island of Terceira near the Columbarium, shows scientifically clear indications of both the consumption and excretion of human-grown cereals grown before 1050 AD, which would be about 400 years before the arrival of the Portuguese. Sorry, guys. And those grains were Northern European in origin and were apparently a Norse staple. Once again, I don't know if that indicates that they were actually colonizing and living on the island, or if they just sort of, you know, stopped off and used it as a latrine. I don't know. But,
oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't think there is there. I have not seen anything in my a little bit too exhaustive research to suggest that there was permanent habitation by Norse people mm-hmm. in the Azores, but mm-hmm. we know they were there long enough to take a deuce. So that's all that matters in this argument.
And who knows? Maybe they weren't even the first.
No, they may not have been. And that's did the Norse build the Columbarium?
Hmm.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually did. The cave is currently the cave that is currently being used as to dry out hay is covered in walls of heavy soot.
Yeah.
And the thinking goes something like this. The hay cave, that's what I'm going to call cave. It. The hay cave was used to incinerate the bodies of dead folks. And then the ashes were gathered up and transferred to some kind of vessel for display in those carved niches inside the neighboring cave. And I should mention, there's also some evidence that there was a type of an altar in there at one point, but it's been destroyed by somebody or something at some point.
And that kind of thing was not really a Norse practice, was it? I mean, having
there's just nothing like caves that we're aware of.
Like little urns of ashes and stuff. Yeah.
No, that's not what the Vikings did.
So
I should mention that the official explanation of the Columbarium is that it was made by early Portuguese settlers to house pigeons.
Now, is this the official explanation or just one of the possibilities? I mean,
what's an official explanation? But like, yes, if you were to go to a local official and say, who built that? They might say, well, we suspect it could be this or that. But officially, that's what people have thought for most of history.
Yeah, pigeons. But that's... seems to me that that's a lot of trouble to go to build a thing like that for pigeons, you know? Pigeons will roost just about anywhere on anything. Yeah. So I find that a little hard to believe. But also, it doesn't explain what was being burned right next door in the neighboring cave. What was being burned so hotly in there?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's also a kind of a case of, you know, we'll just call it the pigeon or the egg. Because pigeons roost there now, people assume that it was made to get them to roost there, right?
That's ridiculous. Purpose. Just go to D.C. and go to, like, say, the Lincoln Memorial. And just as you're staring at the statue of Abe, keep your ears open and tell me what you hear. You hear this little... sound,
you don't need to go pigeons. To all that trouble to make a place for pigeons.
No, they go where they're not welcome. They do.
I guess I also picture like a roof in New York City, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh yeah,
to, if you want to raise pigeons, you don't need to build a complicated stone carving.
It just isn't necessary,
but it is technically possible, I should say.
Yeah, it just seems ridiculous to me, but But there's also evidence that people lived in the Azores well before the arrival of the Portuguese, and maybe well before the arrival of the Norsemen as well.
That's true.
Yeah, because there is, and this is a fascinating little mystery in and of itself, which is the statue.
Yeah.
And Corvo, the Northwest Island in the Azores, used to be called the Island of the Statue, and that's one of the names of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's also, by the way, Corvo means crow in Portuguese, but there are no crows on the island. The early sailors were confused about what a cormorant was, I guess.
Yeah. Silly Portuguese. So, yeah, tell us. Give us a travelogue here. Tell us about Corvo.
There's less than 500 people on Corvo, even today. In fact, actually, I've seen that number quoted as about 400.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, the first Portuguese settlers to get there, they had to approach from the west. Well, on one of those early voyages, as they were pulling up to the island, the sailors spotted a statue perched on a volcanic ridge over the ocean.
On the island of Corvo. Yeah.
On Corvo, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a statue. How would a statue get there? So when they managed to find...
Yeah, and remember, this is a statue big enough that they were able to spot it from the sea, from a pretty decent distance away.
One of the kind of inspirations for this episode I should give credit to is a YouTuber named Rare Earth, who's done a series on the Azores, and he filmed the ridge that they claim it was located on. And when you say ridge, I mean, this is a cliff. They would have been... out on the ocean looking way up at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they did eventually find a harbor to land in, and then they went up to look at this thing. And when they found it, they were surprised to find that it wasn't just something someone stuck up there. It actually had been there for a long time. It was very old. It had obviously been worn down by the wind and everything. It depicted a man on horseback with no saddle, his right arm pointing out to the west. And there's a lot of dispute about what he was pointing at, and that gets into historical legend that I'm going to kind of ignore.
Yeah, some people say it was pointed at Boston. Some people say it was pointed at Brazil.
Yeah. I'm not even going to touch that. I have no idea. My guess would be that he was pointing due west where the sun sets. That would be my guess.
I'll buy that.
We don't know. At its base, though, was an inscription. And nobody aboard that early vessel could even begin to guess what language or script it was written in. It was just they didn't have any idea what it said, of course, but they couldn't even guess whose writing that was. And we know this because the captain and his mates, anyone keeping a log on that, wrote complimentary descriptions. Some of those documents survive to this very day, even if the statue actually does not.
Yeah, that's really kind of sad about the statue, you know. It sat in its place for decades, actually, after the Portuguese arrived. And nobody who saw it at the time had any idea about who could possibly have made it. I'm sure it was... There's probably a lot of lively discussion. There probably wasn't anything else to do on Corvo, because frankly, even today, there's really nothing to do on Corvo that I could see. I don't want to piss off our Corvanese listeners. I'm sure we have at least several on the island, right? But it looks like kind of a quiet place. What else to do but talk about the mysterious statue? And again, the statue is a legit mystery in and of itself. Yeah, a lot of people are pondering the mystery of this statue. But eventually the King of Portugal wanted it brought back. And this is, I've heard two versions. One is that he wanted it brought back whole, but it accidentally got busted during the transportation process, which is easy to understand because you're trying to hoist it down from this ridge way the hell up high where it's at. And it would be very easy to drop it and break it.
Well, I think what they would have had to do, Joe, is actually not hoist it down the ridge, which is, it's a sea cliff. I doubt they did that. Probably what they did is they had to carry it overland to the other side of Corvo where there's a port.
Yeah, the temptation, if you've been tasked with that, the temptation to break it up into pieces to make it transportation a little easier would be overwhelming, I would think. the king might have not cared whether it was in one piece or not either.
We don't know what it was carved out of, and the volcanic rock that's all over Corvo, which you would presume they would carve it out of, isn't like crazy strong, right? It's not like it was granite, so it may have been easier to break than you thought.
Alas, but it did get transported back to the king. And it was around there in pieces. I don't know exactly where it was kept. If the king had, if they tried to reassemble it, maybe, or
Or it sounds like it was never reassembled.
Yeah.
It was basically the court. So, you know, the king had sort of like a little museum of his own. This was apparently pretty common in the times.
Sure.
Of just cool artifacts and works of art that he could show off to people. And yeah. That's where it was. I mean, what room it was in? It was somewhere in Lisbon in the palace.
Right. But yeah, anyway, unfortunately, the pieces, they were around for a while, but eventually they got lost. Yeah. Which is friggin' sad. But yeah, there's no photos, no drawings, no. That's the other thing. It's like nobody made drawings and detailed descriptions of the pieces, which, or maybe they did and they got burned or something like that.
Wouldn't surprise me if somebody did and it just has been lost to time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, you know, it's probably just a victim one way or the other of Portuguese nationalism. They discovered the Azores. No one beat them there. And the statue was kind of evidence that somebody had been there before them. So you could sort of see the motive for perhaps, you know, getting rid of the evidence, you know, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The statue.
So over time, the statue, it passed into legend. There have been many descriptions of it, fantastic descriptions, mythology surrounding it. It's even been said to have been a statue of the Virgin Mary, which makes not a single lick of sense.
No.
There isn't much more than I've told you, than we've told you, that could be verified about it. It was a statue. It was a guy on a horse. The horse didn't have a saddle. The guy was pointing west. Beyond that, there's like not that much to say about it, but it does mean that someone was there.
Although, well, there is some disagreement. Some people think that it's possible the statue never existed. I mean, I think it probably did personally. But you know, that I just thought I'd have to throw that in there, that there are some people out there who think it never existed at all, or maybe it was a natural rock formation that had eroded due to wind and everything like that. Eventually, it sort of resembled a guy on a horse.
I think so, that last one is remotely possible, but I'm inclined to think that something was there. There's just so many descriptions over such a long time that are consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's another interesting little clue there besides the statue, which is that the coins. So there is a story that a stash of Carthaginian coins was discovered on the island in sometime in the 18th century. That might indicate the statue was probably also Carthaginian in origin. But the coins, even though the coins are interesting, it's not exactly clear if they ever existed. They probably did. But at the same time, at the time they were discovered, the island was well settled. And so the coins could mean that there were Carthaginians living on the island, you know, like before the time of Christ, you know, but it could also be that somebody brought them to the island after the Portuguese settlement of the islands too. We just don't know.
Yeah. It also could have been a fraud, maybe a fraud perpetrated against this poor German guy.
Yeah. That's possible too. It's possible the whole thing is just BS.
You can't really know, which is what's frustrating about the coins.
Well, you know, actually though, I mean, I want to maybe wind up by talking about this. If you poke around the Azores long enough, both above and underwater, you might find more evidence of, you know, people that were there before, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, I totally believe the Carthaginians and the Phoenicians before them were amazing sailors. And so, you know, it's entirely possible that they were out there prior to the time of Christ. They were out there on the Azores. Maybe. I don't know. We should talk about that in theories maybe though, right?
That is for the theories section.
Yeah, let's talk about next up. Yeah, sorry. I'm getting ahead of us here. Yeah.
Not you. Next up is the bowl. And it's not really a bowl, but that's what they call it. It's sort of like a giant mortar and pestle carved into a solid rock outcropping. It doesn't move. You can't pick the bowl up and take it with you.
No.
It's carved into the rock. It's really easily identifiable, even to a layman, as a giant mortar and pestle that ancient peoples would use to grind grains or dried tubers or whatever into flour.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, who made it? We know that really from the jump, the Portuguese who arrived there had proper mills and other methods to get, you know, to mill grain that was way less labor intensive and could yield better and more grain. And so scientists who are doing some really complex work to identify it have trouble pinning down who would have made it, but they do say, based on some of the decay of the sharper edges and some other stuff that goes a little above my head in terms of electrochemical analyses of rock and stuff, say that it was ancient and very likely from before the time of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably wasn't our homeboys, the Vikings.
Yeah, that does kind of rule them out. But but it does appear, human hands made that thing. Why the hell they did, I'm not really sure. I mean, it could have been for grinding grain, or maybe it was for just butchering animals. They had a nice little bowl so you could catch all the blood.
It's so smooth. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these things. We have them in Oregon. Native people here used to make these basically same things. Apparently, the smoothness of it is what is an indication that it was used for some type of purpose like that. But yeah, why? Who? No one knows.
So, yeah, it's a legit mystery. But if you stick around past our wonderful commercials, which we're about to play you, you can join us as we solve the mystery. We're going to try to figure out the thing that, talented scientists and hardworking, smart researchers could not figure out. Why? Because we're Joe and Vince. We're smarter than everybody else. God damn it. But I don't want to give you any spoilers here, but Vincent actually has got a theory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vincent's got a theory that could, totally cause us to rewrite human history. So,
yeah. Well, not totally. Just a little bit. But that's a big deal to me.
It is a big deal, and I want people to stick around till after the commercials. So, okay. A little bit of a tease, but okay, we'll be right back.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So, time to solve the mystery. Who built the Columbarium? Who settled the Azores centuries, really millennia ago? Who? There's some theories. Let's see. So, you want to lead us off with one of your theories, Vincent?
Sure. Well, I'll say theory number zero is the Portuguese. I actually don't really think there's really no evidence at all for this, other than that they were there. And we didn't really know what the early Portuguese settlers were up to. You know, there's not really good records of what the subsistence farmers who lived on Terceira were up to. I'm going to probably throw it out. I really don't think the Columbarium was built by the Portuguese. And I think there's a lot of evidence against it. Mm-hmm. But there is a folktale on the island about who built the Columbarium.
Yeah.
And we'll call that theory number one.
Yeah.
The Romans did it.
Romans?
Romans.
Romans. Sorry, I couldn't resist the Life of Brian reference there.
Every time. But right? So the locals call it the Columbaria Romana. That's actually what its official name is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little evidence of this, that it was built by the Romans. In fact, there's none at all. It's not really what the Romans did with their dead. Not a million miles off, but it doesn't archaeologists that are experts in Roman history and Roman rituals, they didn't really build these things, these columbariums that looked like that. They don't think the Romans were up to much that got there. Plus, we actually know for all but a certitude that Roman ships just would not have been able to make that voyage. And we know this because the Romans tried Atlantic exploration and it went miserably. They could really only hug the coast. in those ships that they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we also have the fact that the Romans are one of the better, how we say, documented of ancient civilizations.
Yeah.
They have no record of having visited there that we can see, although there are things lost to time. But we do know that the Romans did not believe in even a folk or legend way that there was anything beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which is what they called Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm. Nothing worth wasting your time on anyway.
There was nothing but ocean out there. So that to me says it's unlikely.
Probably not. They had a lot of work to do just holding their empire together. But that's an interesting little fact, though, that the Phoenicians and later the Carthaginians, and by the way, for our listeners, they all know this except for a couple of them, but I'll tell it anyway. The Phoenicians actually founded Carthage.
Yeah.
So the Carthaginians were, in a sense, Phoenicians, in a sense.
Yes.
Yeah, but their heyday was much, much later than the Phoenicians. But both of those civilizations, they were seafaring. They had wide, wide trading networks that went well beyond the Straits of Gibraltar, up and down the Atlantic seaboard. And they actually like to promote the idea that the ocean past Gibraltar was just gooey, impassable mud flats that would trap your ship and whirlpools that would suck you in and monsters that would eat you.
Monsters, yeah.
Yeah, and it was early disinformation is what it was. But they
exactly
were actually,
what it was.
They were actually fairly successful at spreading these rumors. And a lot of people back in the day bought into this myth that going beyond the pillars was both dangerous and pointless. Including reportedly both Aristotle and Plato actually believed this. And of course, the Romans believed that a lot. Meanwhile, the Phoenicians and the Carthaginians were maintaining their big trading networks up and down the Atlantic seaboard, the jerks. They lie to everybody and then they could take advantage of it. And by the way, they were so rumor has it, they were so jealous of their trade networks beyond the Straits of Gibraltar that they would execute anyone that they found with a map of anything beyond the Pillars of Hercules.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. That's wow.
Yeah, they were hardcore about it. And they did not want anybody knowing about anything going on past the pillars. Jerks. Let's see. So anyway, we're still talking about the Romans, of course. And as I say, the Romans apparently, for the most part, bought into the propaganda. Mm-hmm. And so, so much for the Romans. Yeah. Plus, I never saw the Romans. I mean, they did a lot of splashing around in the Mediterranean and such, but I never really saw them as a real seafaring civilization. I mean, not
really. They weren't the epic sailors that a lot of those guys were, like the Phoenicians.
Yeah.
But they did travel pretty far, but they did it really differently than what we would think of, like, say, like the Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
They would hug the coastlines.
Yeah.
They really could not make long journeys across open ocean. Their boats, for the most part, their ships just were not made to do that. So, for example, they traveled, we know, at least as far as Goa, India. They probably actually went quite a bit further than that. But they could only do it by bouncing from port to port a few miles offshore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I think that kind of rules them out. Yeah. So another theory that's out there, this is, we'll call this theory too, the Atlantean. Yeah, Atlantis, which is possible. But then, you know, the problem with that is like, you know, where did the Atlanteans come from? But I suppose, I mean, given that the Azores are, but, you know, we know this now from when we can look under the water now, I mean, it's easy to see how you might think, like, 100 plus years ago, that maybe Atlantis was the Azores or part of the Azores, and one of those volcanoes.
That is a popular theory among Atlantean enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah. And one of the islands, the most biggest, most successful, most symmetrical of the islands, was home to Atlantis, and suddenly the volcano blew, and that was it. It was no more.
I mean, it is volcanic. Yeah. They have earthquakes like Atlantis apparently had.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, if the Azores were part of Atlantis, the only thing they built really was this one, or actually there's actually another one, these set of caves and like a couple of, you know, bowls, you know, like it just doesn't.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if Atlantis, if there was a nearby island that was the original Atlantis and it blew up and sank beneath the waves and everything, you would expect that there would have been a lot of outlying towns that were Atlantean as well.
I see. And that's what the Azores would be?
than on the other islands. It wouldn't. Yeah. And so Atlantis was one of the Azores. It goes away, but there should still be evidence, plenty of evidence on the other islands, right?
I guess.
Another part of the theory is also that it wasn't part of the Azores. Atlantis was not part of it, but they were close enough by.
Yeah. Because
remember, Atlantis was supposedly beyond the Pillars of Hercules. Right?
Yes, that's why a lot of people have thought that the Azores are Atlantis. I mean, and this has gone on for centuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess my beef with it was that when Atlantis sank and when Plato, sort of gives us a very rough timeline of when this would have happened, nobody knew what was out there. So who told the Egyptians that told the Greeks, who told Plato's grandpa, who then, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, but this goes into the weirdness that is the lore around Atlantis. All I can tell you is that there is no evidence that anyone has found of a super advanced civilization that we are, like, what we're seeing in the archaeology of the Azores, of Terceira and Corvo, is not a super advanced civilization. So yeah, mm-hmm. It could be, like you're saying, like a sort of remote colony in the vicinity of Atlantis. I mean, all that's possible, but then you can get into stuff like aliens built it, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It starts to get into the realm of you're speculating so much that I can't really, it's hard to say yes or no to it, right? Like, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm gonna rule out the Atlanteans, just because, I mean, at least with the Romans or the Carthaginians or whoever, we at least know that they existed. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah. So,
the Atlanteans, we're not so sure. Let's kick that one. Let's kick that one to the curb here. So you got another theory for us there, Vincent?
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'll take theory number three, because it's actually my own, even though it's not my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kind of speed run this theory. I don't actually believe it.
Yeah.
But it's a thought I had, right? So you remember how it looks easy to sail from Lisbon to the Azores? Like, it's just a straight shot, 2,000 kilometers, just straight out the port.
Pretty much due west, yeah.
But it's, as we said, as we went to lengths to explain to you, it's actually a giant pain in the bollocks.
Yeah.
You have to sail south. And that actually probably excludes most of the Mediterranean cultures, like the Greeks and the Romans, because there's not a lot of evidence they actually sailed far enough. So you have to go to like Gambia. That's how far south you have to go to get in this current.
Mm-hmm.
It's way far south. And we just don't think there's not any evidence they made it that far south to get into that current. So most of Mediterranean cultures can be kind of passed off. We'll revisit that in a second. But if you were to take the route the Portuguese took, but not leave from Portugal, who would be basically in that, who would be the likely candidates? Well, if there was a seafaring culture in ancient Africa, maybe they did that. Maybe they managed to, they just wanted to check out what was up north and out to sea. They got in that current and were able to land there.
The only issue with that is I was trying to do a little research on seafaring cultures in West Africa, and I was really actually able to find nothing.
There were some people in the Niger Delta who were pretty dang good sailors. But this would have been quite a bit later, even than the Vikings.
Yeah.
So I couldn't either. You have to kind of speculate. And the only thing I can really say is that maybe the statue on Corvo had an African language that Portuguese people weren't able to recognize and never thought to check into, because Europeans don't always bother with that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, but I did want to point it out. It would actually be easier to get there from someplace in West Africa than from Europe or the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to mention.
Yeah, possible. As for the inscription, there's still notes about that, right? What it was. Mm-hmm. Any linguists tried to tackle that at all?
I haven't read any super modern studies of the notes about it, but people in its day had all kinds of theories, and they tended to lean toward Greek.
Really?
But obviously, because there were and are people who can read Greek and even classical Greek, no one could decipher it, right? So you have to imagine that when it's sitting around the Portuguese court, somebody who studied Greek, as people studied Greek and Latin back in those days, would have come in. And if it was just simple Greek, even ancient Greek, different from modern Greek, somebody could have said, I at least know what writing that is.
Oh yeah, for sure. and if you had nobody in Portugal, you're the king, you can send for somebody.
That's true.
From somewhere, who speaks Greek. So, So anyway,
can't say for sure what that writing was. And I wish there were more modern studies, but I think generally people are a little nervous about that.
Yeah, so the Africans, there's like, there's really no.
No, I think it's about as good as a theory of the Romans, which is honestly not that good.
Yeah, there's another theory out there. I don't know who came up with this particular theory. I'm not keen on it myself, but we'll throw it out there. Which is theory number four, the Chinese.
Oh, this is me. I came up with this.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, so nobody else is out there claiming this.
This is just me.
Yeah.
And I think we should speed run this theory too, because I think it's actually quite a bit worse than the Africans theory.
No, dude. Actually, there's a guy out there named Gavin Menzies who wrote a book. Actually, I came across his book in a used bookstore one time, and I was reading the back cover, and I thought, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I read the book. It is interesting. It's a good book.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, I, in so much as
it's entertaining.
Yeah. No. I actually, it's a fairly fat little book. So before I tackled it, I decided to check up on this guy's credentials a little bit and do a little research on him and the recent reviews of the book. And oh my God, it was just shellacked by the. It wasn't just panned. Yeah. It was brutally beaten by the critics. I mean, his whole theory is about the Chinese. And his theory was that a Chinese flotilla actually discovered the United States in 1421. And
if you think the theories we're dishing out here are unlikely, his stuff is he's basing it on even thinner proof than I'm using about the Africans who sailed to the Azores.
And yet here's what it is though. It's if he obviously is better. He's better at persuasion than either of us, because he actually not only talked somebody into publishing his book, but he didn't he get a PBS special out of it as well.
PBS special, yeah.
And yeah, he got a big yeah. And they regurgitated his ludicrous claims, practically verbatim.
Yeah,
yeah.
The thing about it is that the part of his book is based on some real stuff that really happened. The Chinese really did send a flotilla of extremely high tech for their time, Arab built ships out to explore the Indian Ocean and Africa, and they never made it back. But we can be reasonably sure that they made it to Kenya because there is genetic proof that at some point in the distant history, Chinese people had little babies with the people who live on these islands off the coast of Kenya.
So they just can't keep it in their pants, can they?
Sounds like they were there for a long time. Sounds like they're, that's every time ancient people landed somewhere, they just got to it.
They just immediately started copulating with the locals. I mean, yeah, right?
Yeah, they've been on a boat for a long time.
But good point, yeah.
Actually, the local lore from those islands says that they took off south, which is what their mission would have been.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, but these people who, of course, were never heard from again, these sailors, sad truth is that they tried to get around the Cape of Good Hope. Yeah, I don't know how that would have worked. And
historians agree it would have worked terribly.
Probably.
Those ships would have been ripped to shreds.
Probably. I mean, when you're in the Cape, going around the Cape of Good Hope, I mean, it's not as bad as going around the Horn of South America. It's not that far south. But you're still down in the roaring 40s anyway. I mean, you're in those that there's a circumpolar air current that goes around Antarctica clockwise.
Right.
If you're looking at that, and having been in Tierra del Fuego in the summertime, when the wind is actually mild, comparatively mild, it's still friggin' ferocious. Down in that part of the world. So I'm sure in the open ocean, trying to get around the Cape of Good Hope. I'm sure that they probably did not make it. And that's probably why they were never heard from again. Their ships were probably if nothing else, I assume they were going under sail. They probably lost their sails and all their rigging, and then were being pushed around all over the place and eventually probably just swamped and sank. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of these days we'll actually find one of these Chinese ships down there.
That would be amazing. Because actually the sad thing about the whole controversy around Gavin Menzies' book is that it's I feel like Gavin Menzies, in order to sell books,
way a little fast and loose with the truth. I mean,
well, he definitely did that. I think that's all but a fact. But the whole thing about the Chinese discovered America, that's the hook. But actually, the whole mission of this flotilla is so interesting and so fascinating that I wish he didn't. I wish he just left it with it. After leaving these islands off Kenya, we don't know what happened to them. But if they did make it to the Cape of Good Hope, what we know about the boats they had, almost certainly they couldn't make it around. They would have been ripped apart at sea, lost their sails, dashed in the rocks. But my silly theory goes that if we're going to just go the Gavin Menzies route and say, hey, maybe somehow, some way they just got lucky with the weather. I don't know what they did get around. then actually they'd be in prime position to get to the Aesir. So that's that theory.
They might, although you know, I don't know how deeply people are probing the DNA of African populations, but you know, you were talking about how they copulated with some Kenyans.
You can see it
and left markers. Yeah. So
You don't even need. I mean, you can't. I mean, they have done genetic studies, but like if you look at the people from these islands, they look like they're half Asian, half African.
Yeah,
maybe a little more African than Asian, but you can see those features in them.
Yeah, and so you'd think if they made it around the Cape that they, you know, there would be other African populations that are similar to this.
That's a really good point, Joe. They would have stopped somewhere.
They would have stopped somewhere, and being sailors, they would have had to have sex with somebody. So
dirty sailors.
All right, so I don't think the Chinese. I think the Chinese, you know, if they had any motivation at all, it would have been to explore, like, you know, the Western Pacific and the Indian Ocean. There's plenty of stuff to poke around with in there.
Head south to Australia.
Without bothering yourself with the Azores, for Christ's sake. So,
I think the idea is if they were on the Azores, like almost everyone we're going to talk about that we've talked about and that we will talk about is that they probably didn't mean to get there because they didn't know it was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They weren't aiming for it. They probably lost.
Right. And if they were lost, by the way, they wouldn't have taken the trouble to create a friggin' statue and put it way up high on a cliff. I don't think they would have done that.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Also, for what it's worth, the Chinese rode with saddles. Mm, but let's talk about some guys who didn't like using saddles.
Oh, those guys.
The Phoenicians. That's theory number five.
The Phoenicians. The Phoenicians. And also, I'm just going to toss in the Carthaginians as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I've already mentioned because the Carthaginians, as I think I already said, were basically Phoenicians. Carthage was founded by the Phoenicians. So one or the other. And Herodotus, the Roman historian, rewrote a story about the Phoenicians. And by his time, it was already as old as Rome is to us. I mean, the Phoenicians were a very ancient civilization. The story was accepted as fact by many knowledgeable Romans. And Herodotus tells us that the pharaoh Necho put the cabbage for a group of Phoenicians to circumnavigate Africa. By cabbage, I mean, you know, moolah, as they say.
He was putting up the money.
Yeah, he put up the money. And the Phoenicians would have been a good choice because they were, you know, able sailors. Mm-hmm. By the way, we're making, you know, 2,000 mile one-way trips routinely across the Mediterranean and outside the Straits of Gibraltar. So his best sailors commanded a Phoenician built and crewed flotilla, which departed from the Red Sea. And they sailed off into the ocean blue, didn't return, were given up for dead. But then 3 years later, some of the ships made a triumphant return back through the Pillars of Hercules. That's 3 years later.
Yeah.
That must have been quite the adventure. I don't know. If this is true or not, and it's a damn shame that the records of it are no longer out there. I mean, at least Herodotus noted something about it. There's actually no evidence that this is true.
There really isn't,
but maybe.
Nope.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, even in Herodotus' time, this would be a folktale.
Yeah.
Pharaoh Necho or Necho, I don't know how you say it. He was a real person who lived. He did. It is to back the story. I did have designs on conquering more of Africa, which may explain why he wanted to send the flotilla out. But there's just no physical proof except for possibly one thing. And I actually found this out after I wrote the script. So I'm sorry to dump this on you, Joe, but
it
is interesting to me. Back in the 19th century in South Africa, in a place called Cape Flats, they found a wreck and it was in bad shape. It had clearly been there for a very long time. So this is not like those ones they find at the bottom of the Mediterranean that are so preserved, they almost look like they could get back on the waves.
Yeah.
This was just, you know, a skeleton of wood, but they were able to sort of look at where the rib cage of the ship had been. And even back then, historians speculated that it could be Phoenician. Mm-hmm. And recent studies of the drawings made at the time, I don't know if they lost it or if it's just decayed or I'm not sure what's going on with it these days. But even historians today say, actually, that's some pretty good work they were doing back in the 19th century, which is not always the case with 19th century archaeology.
No.
This does kind of look like a Phoenician ship. So that's a slim thing. But when you're talking about how there's this issue of taking ancient ships around the Cape of Good Hope and that they just really weren't prepared for seas that rough, maybe they did lose some of their ships. Maybe a bunch of them went down. Because remember, this is not one boat. This is not
a single ship headed out.
Yeah, a whole bunch. I don't even know how many. I don't think it's ever said how many, but it could have been a ton of them. Maybe only a few of those ships got through.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if you throw like buckshot, you know, you throw enough of them at it, some of them are going to make it through. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's an interesting thing.
And one of the other things about it that interests me is that, in the time of the pharaohs, were humans aware that you could actually circumnavigate Africa?
Well, that's, I mean, honestly, Joe, I don't even want to get into that this late in the podcast because it's such a huge topic.
I just say that's another thing that led to me lends a teeny smidge of credibility to the whole thing, because I'm not so sure that that Herodotus or anybody else would have known for a fact that you could sail around Africa.
Right.
And here they're telling this story about this flotilla that, you know, managed to sail all the way around Africa from the Red Sea around to through the Straits of Gibraltar.
I mean, that's a really good point because, right, Herodotus and whoever was telling that story, they didn't know it was down there in South Africa at that time. They had no idea.
Yeah, no.
But apparently the legend was what your average learned Roman would have thought was that, yeah, at some point you get to the bottom of Africa and then you get out back into the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how it works. But that's not, there was no map, you know, they didn't look it up on Google Earth.
Yeah, no, I just don't know that our maps were that complete back in those days.
They almost certainly weren't.
But here's the deal though about this. I mean, and if it was true, then Phoenicians were damn good sailors. But
in Herodotus's text, that's actually where it comes up. How great those Phoenician sailors were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, and the Carthaginians as well. I mean, the Phoenicians actually had back in their heyday, they had at least one route that I mentioned earlier, 2,000 miles one way, all the way from Lebanon, through the Pillars and down the west coast of Morocco.
That's wild.
And that was a regular trading route for them. Mm-hmm. And so it's not hard to imagine that they extended their explorations, at least if not their trading partners, further south on the African coast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, being the inquisitive types as they are, they might have like actually sent ships out on missions into the Atlantic to just, you know, sail out, loop around, see what you can see, come on back.
Or they got blown off by a storm.
Yeah, there's that too.
If we know they were already in that part of the world, then they could have caught that current that takes you straight to the west end of the Azores, where as we said, if you're a really good sailor, you turn it around and you head back. And then you nail it. You're able to do it.
Yeah.
But okay, I just want to run down this how this relates to the Columbarium.
Yeah.
You know who built Columbariums like the one in Terceira?
How many guesses do I get? Well, okay, the Phoenicians.
It's the Phoenicians and the Carthaginians.
Yeah.
You know who wrote in a dead script that is not intelligible to any modern peoples in the West?
The Phoenicians. Yeah, they
did. It was them, yeah.
Yeah.
You know who likes to carve statues of men riding horses with no saddles pointing?
Yeah, the friggin' Phoenicians.
Yeah.
As historians call them, the friggin' Phoenicians. But
the friggin' Phoenicians.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is some kind of good evidence on that.
Yeah, and again, they're totally credible because, again, they range so far in their sailing, their little sailing adventures. And we know that they were on the west coast of Africa, at least as far as Morocco.
Yeah.
And they ranged up, northward too, up in Europe, up along Europe, the European seaboard as well. And so, it's not at all inconceivable that they made it out there. Yeah.
Even if it wasn't the story that Herodotus tells us about them sailing around Africa, they were still in a prime position. I think that's really cool. But there's one more thing I want to say about this, right?
Yeah.
That kind of like makes fireworks go off in my brain.
Okay.
If the Phoenicians, or anyone else for that matter, got stranded there, like we think maybe the Vikings did, right? Stopped over.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have built a columbarium. Not like that. It had places for over 100 urns.
Yeah, no, it indicates long-term settlement. Yeah, not a stop off to take a poop and get some fresh water. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Vikings did.
And there's even a second less explored cave. It's on military property that makes it harder to get to, I guess. I don't know. I couldn't find out much about this cave, but it apparently has even more niches and places like this. It's much more complex and bigger that implies there might have been even more urns stored on the island of Terceira. And you wouldn't do this if you weren't established there. It looks like they stayed. They carved these milling bowls and made pottery. They lived there.
Yeah.
They were the first Azorians.
Yeah. Cremated their dead. They built monuments, at least if you believe in the statue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite the monument.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably maybe for generations. And I don't know what caused them to die off, but apparently they did eventually.
Or left.
Yeah. Or maybe they left. I don't know. But, and it's too bad they burned their dead, actually, because it does appear that they probably did. Because if they had buried them, we could dig up their skeletons and find out a little bit more about them.
Well, that's kind of what I'm hoping. And this is, I don't know how hopeful I should be about this, but cremation is, as anyone knows, as I'm sure Bonnie knows, is not a perfect process.
Yeah.
If we can get into the cremation chamber, then if they move the hay for us, they may find bone fragments in there. And while they've likely been carbonized, which will not be super helpful, there may be evidence that can help us connect who those people were.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so it's bizarre. It just goes to show that friggin' mm-hmm. people will just go anywhere and live.
Yeah.
I mean, they find human beings living in the most unlikely of places. I mean, so, you know.
I think this is cool is that I think that changes more than the history of the Azores or Portugal. I think it actually kind of just ever so slightly would tweak the history of the human species. And that, I love that stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more we find out, the better, you know. And my thinking, though, and I sort of hinted at this before, is that if we really want to find out more about the history of the Azores, the ancient history, we really need to start looking on the sea bottom around the islands.
That would be interesting.
If there were regular routes by the Phoenicians, Carthaginians, the Atlanteans, God knows who, and there must have been if there were permanent settlements there, then there would be shipwrecks. Some ships must have sank coming and going to the islands, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, the proof is on the sea bottom, I think. Hopefully. Maybe. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it is my thought, and then maybe I'm wrong, that whoever went there had to get there by ship.
Oh,
and so I would imagine that even if it isn't a shipwreck, there may be something down there, pottery, whatever, that you could dig up. But I also think that, you know, if you look into it, archaeological surveys of the Azores are actually pretty recent phenomenon, mainly because why would you go and look for archaeology, right? Human archaeology in a place we know wasn't populated until 1427.
Exactly. But now,
there's not a lot of purpose to do that.
Now there's suddenly a bit more interest in the whole topic. So yeah, we might be seeing some more discoveries. They might actually start digging up some skeletons here and there.
Yeah, right. You know? I mean, they could actually find. Yeah. So I think that no matter what happens, this podcast will be out of date and something much information, much cooler. Then it will replace what we've said here today.
Extremely
likely.
That's
cool. I like that.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. We'll do a little brief follow up episode, a little bonus episode for you folks if that happens happens.
We are over time, so I think we should sign it off, Joe.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, we are. Yep. Yeah. Let's get out of here. Okay. All right. So, folks, that's it for this week. You know, stay tuned as always to hear the fascinating information about how to get a hold of us via email and social media and stuff like that. And of course, the usual plea to leave us a nice rating and a nice review wherever you download or stream this fine podcast from. Yeah, I don't know. Right. Have I left anything out?
No, I think that's everything. Just stay tuned and get in touch with us. We have a cool social media community that you should consider joining. And yeah, share. Tell a friend if you've already reviewed us on your podcast app.
Until next week, as they say in the Azores, ta-ta.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter @shockingdetails. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.